Hi, and welcome to Yarning Disability, the FPDN podcast. I'm your host, Bernard Namok Jr. I'm a proud St. Paul Badu and Caribbean man from the Torres Strait. And I'm also the son of the designer of the Torres Strait Islander flag, Bernard Namok Sr., and an advocate for the First Peoples Disability Network. Join me now on Yarning Disability as we showcase First Nations people living with a disability, as well as their families and carers, and other industry professionals.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are warned that the following podcast may contain the voices and names of people who are deceased. The First Peoples Disability Network and the producers of this podcast recognise the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders past, present, and the future leaders of tomorrow. FPDN would like to acknowledge our founding elders and their lasting legacy, Uncle Lester Bostock and Auntie Gail Rankin, and acknowledge all First Peoples living with a disability. Hi, and welcome to another episode of Yarning Disability. I'm Carly Wallace. I'm the National Training and Engagement Manager at FPDN and a regular contributor to this podcast. FPDN as an organisation supports the cultural model of disability and inclusion. So what does that mean exactly? Well, it means that First Nations people with disability are participating meaningfully in their families, in their communities, and in their culture. To quote Dr. Scott Avery from the publication, Culture is Inclusion, a narrative of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people with disability. It may take 10, 20, or even 100 years to understand the phenomena of culture using the language of Western science. It may also be that we are never meant to know, but in looking at the current state of the evidence, connecting people with their First Peoples culture is most likely to rapidly improve their quality of life. On today's episode of Yarning Disability, we meet Noongar and Wiradjuri man Clinton Bennell, who has innately lived the very concept of culture is inclusion, as a brother of someone with an intellectual disability and the father of a little boy named Theo, living with multiple disabilities.
So my name is Clinton Bennell. I'm a Noongar and Wiradjuri man. I live in Adelaide, which is Kaurna country. So I've got two boys. My eldest is Dwayne. He's six tomorrow. And my youngest, Theo, he's 18, 19 months now, and he was born with hearing loss. We're still looking at the severity of that loss, but we're looking at, it's looking like the current testing is like moderate to severe hearing loss. So he's got hearing aids at the moment, and we've just found out through DNA testing that he's got a thing called Noonan syndrome, which is developmental delays and things like that, with multiple different whole bunch of signs and symptoms that have affected him.
Yeah, right. I personally never heard of it before, and probably like a lot of our other mob wouldn't probably know about it either. Like, what I guess are some of the signs and stuff of that disability?
Yeah, so like you said, like not a lot of our mob have heard of it. I haven't heard of it until we got the phone call recently. So we've got an appointment to go see the specialist, and they'll discuss what it actually means. But basically some of the signs, he's actually quite small for his size. So he's, even though he's 18 months, he's still not walking by himself. His face, there's some development things with his face. So it's more squashed and more flat than what a usual, what is considered normal, I guess, a face should look like. So those are some of the physical tells, but there's some developmental delays as well. So he's not speaking at the level he should be at as well. So I think that with the mixture of his hearing loss has put him back a little bit, but he's still a happy and thriving young boy for sure.
So like, how did you, obviously besides the physical signs that you just spoke of, like how, I guess, did you get to the point where you're like, oh, my little fella might be a little bit different and I have to maybe get him checked out?
Yeah. So definitely from when he was born, they did the hearing test, and the hospital was really good. They identified in the early stages that he definitely failed his right ear hearing test, so which required more follow-up. And as he grew, the more testing they did, they definitely found out that, you know, he was hearing impaired. So we've been on a journey of discovering how much that's going to be. So is it progressive hearing loss? What are the supports? Because early on they were talking about cochlear implant. So it's kind of just been a roller coaster of emotions. How severe is it? And you know, what is it going to impact in terms of his life? And what, you know, what are the outcomes, and what are his needs going to be going forward, really? In terms of the Noonan syndrome, that's really new. So we knew he was small, but his mum's small as well. So we just kind of originally thought maybe it's just he's taking up after her size. But it was just kind of because they did the DNA testing for his hearing loss, they were able to find that. And the other contributing factors that once we were told that was what it was, it kind of like just, it was like a bit of relief, you know, in terms of we finally found something that it seemed like all these random things were happening to him. And once we got that diagnosis, first thing, you know, worst thing and best thing, jump on Google, see what it's all about. And it kind of just made sense for us. And was like, okay, well, you know, this kind of places him. And, you know, we can kind of see a way forward, if that makes sense.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, our mob, we don't always see disability unless it's a physical disability. You know, we're very inclusive. Hey, you know, we just take our mob for who they are and how they come, I guess. So to have a label or a diagnosis sometimes can be stigmatizing. Did you feel any of that? Like you said, it was a relief, but did you feel any kind of stigmatization from that?
No, not to be honest, not really, because I have a brother with an intellectual disability. So disability for me is just normalized in my life and my family. So I don't get caught up on labels of disability, impairments, whatever it is. It's just, that's like you said, that's just the individual. And that's just who they are. And that's whether it's considered a strength or a weakness, we don't see that, you know, that's just their identity. For me, no, it wasn't really, even when we got told early stages and our kid would have hearing loss, I kind of just thought, I didn't want to pity him, you know, because that's just not what I got taught growing up, you know. It was just about, okay, well, how do I support him? You know, what does he need? And just meet the need. And, you know, he's not feeling sorry for himself now. So why am I going to put that on him? So that was my sort of mindset going forward.
Yeah, I love that. And you said that, you know, with your brother as well, like tell me about growing up with your brother with an intellectual disability. You talked about it was very normalized for you. How was it normalized? Like, tell me about that.
Yeah, I think to kind of build on what you was talking about, you know, my dad didn't treat him any different. For good and for bad, you know, definitely feel like he probably could have needed some more support. But he was treated just like, I've got three other sisters, I should say, and he wasn't treated any different. And, you know, the expectations that he would contribute to the family, because his disability, he's got the mind of a teenager. He does have some independence. He's capable of going out and going to the movies and all that kind of stuff. But in terms of living independently, he doesn't have that capacity. So growing up with that, you know, he was 30 when I was born. So it was almost like a relationship of, yes, he's my brother, but, you know, unofficially, he's kind of like my second dad as well. So it was kind of like a beautiful relationship. And it just, as we've grown, that relationship's changed as well. So as I'm maturing and grow, you know, am I maturing? No. as I'm maturing, you know, I've got more of a protective factor over him. And so it's kind of like, I understand his brain as a child, like as a child or adolescent. So I've got a very protective and almost it's coming 360 where I'm his protector now, whereas he was mine, you know? So it was beautiful being his best friend, being almost like a son to him, and then growing up, and then now it's reversing. So it's been beautiful.
Mm. Do you think that's like culture plays a part in that as well, like that reverse role, like as we, you know, we have those different roles in our community as we get older, and you know, there's elders and there's senior women and men and things, and then I guess with disability in our family members, that might look a little bit different, hey?
Yeah, I love that, because I think what a lot of people, probably I'm going to say, you know, mainstream media and mainstream Australia, they don't realize how much discipline and responsibility we as Aboriginal people have. And when we put it in that family context, absolutely, because my dad's passed now. So it's my responsibility to look after my older brother because he doesn't have capacity. And, you know, my mum looks after him on a day-to-day basis, but being the only male in the family, it's my responsibility to have those hard, tough conversations with him and also protect him as well. So I think to sum that up, it's kind of like you see the need and you meet the need. And that's just how we are with it in our families, our communities and our culture as well.
Yeah, like how does culture, I guess, play a role in your family unit with your brother and now your son? Like how do you then, you know, you said you're basically the man now in the family. How does that play a role, I guess, culture?
It's a little bit hard for my brother because his communication is, you know, it's not at a, you know, he couldn't have the conversation like we're having now. I wouldn't say he's non-verbal, but he can't pronounce some words and he has trouble communicating. So I communicate with him quite well because I've grown up with it. But, and I'm a little bit off topic here, but I just want to share this because when I'd invite my friends over from school and he'd try to talk to them, they couldn't understand him, you know, whereas I was just like picking it up. I knew what he wanted. I knew what he was communicating. And that kind of shocked me. That was kind of first time I sort of noticed like there was a little bit of a change or a little bit of a difference. And I thought, well, why can't you understand my brother? He's telling you this, this, and this. But to get back to culture, I think it places him. Culture places him and it comes in his identity. So, you know, we get stigma of like, I'm fair skinned, my brother's fair skinned as well, but we've got obviously Aboriginal features and his nose is quite wide and he's very proud of that because he said that's his Noongar nose, you know? So he's got his little bits where he holds onto and I think his culture and identity. So definitely him being a Noongar man it places him and it keeps him grounded as to who he is and where he belongs and definitely a key member of our family for sure.
Yeah, I love that. Does he go to any like men's groups or anything like that? Has he kind of taken part in any of that stuff over the years?
My brother's really independent and he doesn't like those kind of things. And I think I'm kind of speaking for him, but I don't think he enjoys those activities. Whereas he'll go out and he'll go to the movies. Like he's got a routine. He's very, very structured. He'll catch the bus, he'll go to the shopping center, he'll go to the movies, he'll watch his movies, he'll have his lunch, and then he'll come home. And that's his routine. You know, he's got it down pat. And he's just very independent. And I think that goes back to his upbringing where I think a lot of people smothered him for support, whereas he's like, nah, I'm independent. I can look after myself. And we appreciate that. And I'm very proud that he can do that, for sure.
With your little fella, you were talking about hearing loss. So that might mean a whole bunch of changes for your family, like maybe Auslan. Have you guys have to think about this type of new approach, I guess, to your world and his?
Definitely. So we're involved with this program. I can't remember the name of it and they're going to kill me. But they come out, they're really good. They come out to the house and they've got these cards made up for us and they've got the visual of how to do the signs for Auslan. But they come out and they do some speech work with him as well. So making sounds depending on the toys and things like that. So that's really effective for him. He's really engaged in that. But yeah, absolutely. My mum, this is what I mean, my family in particular been exposed to disability and, you know, hearing loss in particular because my mum knows some Auslan from her cousin who grew up, they grew up together. So she's kind of relearning how to communicate with Auslan. And it's a little bit different, I think, from the Eastern States to South Australia where I am. So we're just doing it as one big family, you know, we're just trying to learn really basic communication. And it's good to see my son Theo, if I sign him something or something like simple, like thank you, he'll understand what it means.
Yeah.
And or we've got our own little, you know, blackfella sign language where like, you know, be like, what do you want? You know, or, you know, you want food and we'll just point to their mouth. So we've got our own communication strategies, but definitely need to learn that Auslan. And, you know, that's going to be a really big part of his life for sure.
your brother do now? Does he work, or is he? Does he? What's he up to?
Nah, he's at home. So he's my brother's nearly 60.
Wow, he's retired. He's
old fella. That's right. But he lives with my mum, and yeah, he just kind of does his thing every day. So they've got a routine for him, structured day. Where he does some housework, he does some cleaning. He's got his dogs. He's got two little Shih Tzus that he loves to death. And he looks after them. And on the weekend, Saturday comes, he's out. But no matter what else is on, it could be my birthday, he'll be out. He'll be at that movies. He don't care.
Yeah, he's more social than me by the sound of it. And he's got two dogs. That's a full-time job. I know about that. So
yeah.
It's a full-time job in itself. You know, looking back, you were saying that it was very normalized. You know, he was very normalized in your house. He wasn't treated any differently, your brother. We all got you know, cousins, you know, mucking around and, you know, having boxing fights within each other. We didn't treat anyone any differently, right?
That's right.
That was it.
He roughed me up too, like growing up.
He did.
Because I played basketball. I played rugby league, but then played basketball, and he would rough me up, and we'd be playing, and he'd be bumping into me, and yeah, no mercy. It's just like, that's it. Yeah,
everyone's treated fairly then, eh? That's for sure.
That's right. He definitely could do with more what I would guess would be like a support worker or a residential care support worker. If he wanted to pursue that independent living, that would have been great for him at a younger age. What we're finding now, and through my experience working in health, is that he needs definitely more care coordination for himself. So as he's gotten older, like most black fellas, we get diabetes. So he's got diabetes, and just managing that and explaining that to him has been a difficult process. So just those small things in terms of what everyday people could, or not everyday, but you know, what would be considered an everyday task, monitoring your blood sugar levels, like that's challenging for my brother, and not understanding the importance of managing and maintaining that. So like what we're looking at now is some support for his health needs and just that continued maintenance of his health needs as well. So I guess for me now, because when my dad was alive, I don't know if it was a pride thing or he just didn't know what to do. He didn't get a lot of that support outside of, you know, he did go to a special school and had a special class, but outside of that, there was no real other supports for him. And I think he definitely could have, you know, if he grew up in today's day and age, he'd definitely be more supported.
Yeah, I think that's that thing we talk about at FPDN. We talk about culture of inclusion. So we don't want to treat our mob any differently. We want them to grow up, and we do have that pride of like, no, I can handle it, you know, especially our old people and our mums and dads, like they're juggling so many things, you know, large families, trying to feed the kids every week. Like having a disability is like you're just another person in the family that we're catering for, and we don't want to, you know, make a big fuss. Hey, like that's a big thing. Like we just get up with our world. But unfortunately, I think a part of that is we do like forget that, oh, you know, we could probably get some help, or my young fella might need a few extra things to help with his level of care. So yeah, that's understandable. I understand where your dad was coming from there, but
yeah.
So like, does that now with you, does that make you as a father of a young fella with a disability, Theo, like, do you think about supports for him and like what you might need and want in place for him?
Yeah, definitely. So already we're looking at, you know, what schools he's going to attend once he's of age. Started to plan that process, his education map, in terms of what primary school will he go to? Is it going to be continued in high school in terms of the hearing support? So we've got a few picked out in Adelaide, definitely. And you know, we know people who have kids with hearing loss as well. So, you know, it's good to link in with them, you know, kind of get their experience from the schools that they've taken their kids to as well. So, I mean, you know what communities are like. We're tight knit. So we all yarn, we all talk. So it's good to get that firsthand experience as well. So.
And like, what about barriers so far that you've, I guess, had to come up against, whether it's in the education system, in health, in these big systems that I guess put the barriers in place for them? Have you experienced any of those so far?
What I've noticed is there's a lot of early detection And then there's steps in place for that as well. So, I mean, I can't really comment for barriers other than what's been, I guess, a little bit of a criticism with one of the speech pathologists that we're working with is just how to engage with Aboriginal families and Aboriginal people where they're doing their best. You know, it's not our fault that, you know, they're not, that Theo is not meeting their expectations of how they should grow or how he should grow, because it puts a lot of pressure on us. And even though we're doing all the right things, it feels like it's not good enough, you know? And that's just in terms of being a culturally safe or a culturally responsive service, that didn't sit well with us. And, you know, a lot of things like when we go to see a dietitian, they'd think that we're not feeding him or things like that. So it's always a negative, and we felt really defensive taking him to these appointments. So that was probably the only negative thing. But once we got that diagnosis of this is Noonan syndrome, it all made sense.
For sure. What are your hopes for, firstly, your brother? And, you know, he's in retirement, he's kicking back at the moment. Like, how do you see you two and your relationship for the next few years?
I wanted to snap out of his sooky, grumpy moods. No.
That just comes from getting older, right? That's everyone as we get older, I reckon.
Yeah, but I love him because he's got no filter and he just tells you straight how it is. So if he's in a mood, everyone knows about it. So I just want him to continue being him. That's what's given me joy. And he doesn't apologize for nothing. He's who he is regardless. And I love that about him. What's really been special for me is to see how he's with my children now. Seeing a lot of how he was with me to my children, that's been really beautiful to watch. Because it's a lot of him going back to doing the things that he did with me. So I just think it's crazy. It's kind of crazy, actually, to see him be the same. Like, he's just the same person.
That's lovely. And what about Theo?
I just want Theo to be the best version of himself. And that doesn't mean he has to fit into whatever expectations or whatever standards. As long as I grow him up to be a confident and someone who can regulate himself and, you know, experience highs, experience lows, but still be confident in who he is, I'll be happy with that. I don't have any, I don't want him to live up to anything. I just want him to be himself. So
nice. Any messages for any parents that may have children with disability for the first time? What advice could you give them?
Whatever the situation is, you just got to own that and then accept it, because it's not going to change. So what, you got to put that child first. You got to put your child first and see what are their needs, and then just put everything you can in place to support them. And I think one of the big things, and it came from a movie, like this is so like cliche, but I was watching, I don't know if you've seen Creed, but I love that boxing one. And his daughter's got hearing loss. And then Rocky's like, oh, are you feeling sorry for her? Because she's not feeling sorry for herself. And that really hit me. And I was thinking, that's kind of what's kept me on track this whole time, is just hearing that. Because my son's not feeling sorry for himself. And any child with a disability doesn't feel sorry for themselves, because it's normal. That's their normal. You know, and we don't need to put that onto them as well. And society doesn't need to put that onto them. So I think if we just grow up this next generation to be inclusive and supportive, we get rid of that stigma.
That was Clinton Bennell, a Noongar and Wiradjuri man, sharing his story as a brother and a father of family members living with disabilities. Thanks for listening to Yarning Disability. FPDN would like to thank you for coming on this journey, as each week we hear from First Peoples living with a disability and shine a light on the issues they are facing. If there's anything you heard in today's episode that raises concerns for you, there is help available. You can contact 13 Yarn on 13 92 76 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 4636, or Lifeline on 13 11 14. Follow FPDN on our social media accounts to stay up to date with future episodes and information. You can also visit our website at www.fpdn.org.au.